The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, we unfortunately have to lead this week's podcast with some very unsavoury news coming out of Osaka. And, well, it has to be said, a worrying recent trend of incidents involving J-League players that are leaving a lot to be desired.
Yeah, it's a real shame because there was a lot of good action on the pitch over the weekend. But yeah, the stories coming out of Osaka that goes into what happened in Niigata last week and at Sendai as well before this weekend. It's not been a very good week for the J-League off the field.
And in the green room, you said hero to villain, and that is very much the case for Gunma Osaka striker Ademilson, who scored an absolutely superb 89th minute winner for his side at home against Kashiwa on Saturday, and then apparently took his celebrations, well, I was going to say a little bit too far, but it turns out to be way too far, as the story goes that he was out drinking pretty much all night. Well, we've all been there, obviously, but we haven't driven straight to club training the following morning. And Ademilson has made some horrible choices here in his actions, since he went out in his car. And he's apparently caused damage to another vehicle, at least one other vehicle. And obviously, once the police found out about this incident, they were down to Gunma Osaka training on Sunday morning to get his side of the story, whatever what he could remember of it.
Yeah, it's pretty indefensible all round, really. He shouldn't have been out, I suppose, with probably breaking COVID regulations just as a starter, and then to be so drunk that you're over the limits going into training is just unbelievable, really. It's just fortunate that nobody has got hurt. I think he's in a very difficult position as it comes a week after Niigata, where Fabio and Pedro Manzi were in a similar situation, a DUI sort of situation. They both had their contracts cancelled by Niigata. So, I mean, it could be the same fate for Ademilson. I think he's currently suspended while an investigation is underway. I know there was a press conference earlier on Monday that Gamba really were just saying we can't answer anything while this investigation's underway. So, yeah, it'd be an interesting one to see where Ademilson goes from here, but I think he's in a lot of trouble, and, I mean, you can't do that. I mean, it's indefensible, as the Mr. Mirai said. I think he was in Osaka, so he was on hand to give a comment on this. So, yeah, really poor from Ademilson, and, yeah, he deserves whatever's thrown at him.
Most definitely so. He's been in Japan for 5 years now, Ademilson. Of course, he began his time in the country and in the J-League with the Yokohama F Marinos before transferring over to Gunma. Over 150 J1 appearances and over 40 goals. But yes, you wonder if that goal on Saturday against Kashiwa might have been his last for Gunma Osaka, and indeed in the J-League. We'll wait and see what punishment the club hands down. But yes, the precedent has been set very, very recently, as Sam said, by Niigata. And Ademilson might have just cost himself his job, and he obviously has no one to blame but himself for that. We've mentioned the Niigata situation. John and Stuart have been mentioning that as well in recent episodes of Extra Time, of course, and Fabio was a very important part of the Niigata first 11, and he's no longer with the club. And as far as unsavoury incidents go, it's very disappointing for us to have to report on the situation up in Sendai with Ryohei Michibuchi also having his contract cancelled by Vegalta after, completely indefensible domestic violence incident that Michibuchi and the club had hoped was swept under the carpet. But news of it has surfaced. And, the club is obviously embarrassed at the nature of the cover-up, and Michibuchi is now out of a job.
Yeah, this is another very unsavoury situation. It's not Sendai haven't come out looking very good, having covered it up since about August the 14th, I think, is the reported date. And it's not like Michibuchi hasn't had previous. There was a period in 2017 where there was an incident, a domestic violence incident. It wasn't necessarily, I don't think he was convicted for it, but Kofu at the time, his club then, they banned him from training for 3 months, cut his wages, and then kind of just let him go. So, yeah, this is just another incident, and they were trying to cover it up, it seems, and then Flash, one of the, and not, I've never really heard of them, but they're the company or newspaper agency or whatever they might be that have kind of released information on this. There were screenshots of various threatening text messages. There were bits of him on FaceTime brandishing a knife. I mean, very unsavory. Yeah, and yeah, he's had previous. He hasn't learned from it. He obviously went back to Sendai's hometown club. I think that maybe they were trying to rehabilitate him or something. But yeah, to continue along this line, that it's just, yeah, it's not very nice at all. I feel for the victim. I know they managed to get a settlement out of him, sort of. It sounded a bit under duress, I think. I don't think it was necessarily the way to go for it, but yeah, it's a very horrible situation. It's hurts Sendai just from a public image standpoint, also from their, obviously, their financial problems. They've been crowdfunding for a long while to try and get some money. That's had to be cancelled now because of this Michibuchi incident. It's just, yeah, Sendai not put in a very good light, and this couldn't have happened at a worse time for them.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, it hasn't been a great couple of weeks. Well, indeed, yeah, a couple of months up in Sendai. But, yeah, for the J-League, some very, yeah, disappointing incidents that we, yeah, we wish we didn't have to talk about. But, yeah, they unfortunately, yeah, they need their airing. And, well, yeah, as we say, it's something that you hate to see. But, yeah, we'll try and return to matters on the pitch from the weekend. It was an abridged match day 24 schedule, Sam, obviously, as the three ACL clubs had already played their games from this match day earlier on in the season in various rearranged midweek fixtures. There was a game between two of the ACL clubs, though, with Yokohama F. Marinos visiting FC Tokyo. That was intended to be our initial game that we'd lead off the episode with. I guess I'm glad, well, we don't have to do that now. We can push off, put back talking about that for just a little while. But, yeah, well, I tell you what I thought we'd do originally, Sam, is we'd just very briefly touch on the results from last Wednesday, because there were three games, of course. The first leg of the Shonan Tosu doubleheader ended 0-0 at the BMW Stadium, and two games involving ACL clubs are brought forward from match day 33. Saw Kobe lose 3-1 at home to Kashima, and Yokohama F. Marinos defeat Nagoya 2-1 at home. So anything notable from those three games that we can touch on before we move on to what happened over the weekend?
Well, certainly not from the first leg of Second Tosu Shonan Belmare. Right. That was a terrible game of football. But the much better games, the Yokohama Nagoya one and the Kashima Kobe one. The Nagoya Yokohama one, I think it was a previous midweek one where I was on with John Steele as part of our video games. And that was one where Nagoya had really got the better of Marinos in that game. They did them tactically, but this one, a much better performance from Yokohama. Nagoya, not quite at it, I don't think. They weren't at it this weekend either, but managed to face Sendai, which was perfect for them. But yeah, it was a good result for Marinos. They, in this period where they go up and down in form, and at the moment they're in reasonable form, at least results-wise, so it was a decent result for them. Kashima as well, they looked a lot better against Kobe. Kobe are a team that are struggling again. It's just their kind of fluctuation that they have under every manager, where it looks a little better for a bit and then just settle back into the same old pattern. It was a really poor performance from Kobe. It's one where they have a lot of possession, don't do anything with it, and then pretty easily cut apart by the opposition. So, yeah, that was kind of the story of Kashima's victory. They went on to then get another good victory this weekend. So they're now back in the ACL race, which is looking very tight. Not everyone wants to put a run of form together. So there's still probably a good 6, 7, 8 teams maybe that are in with a shout for the ACL. So those results did kind of set the weekend up quite nicely.
Yes, indeed. So over the weekend, leaders Kawasaki, Kobe, Oita and Shimizu were not in action, but we'll have a little bit to say about Frontale after we discuss Gamba Osaka's win over Kashiwa. Well, I guess we've already briefly touched on it because we said Ad Milson scored an excellent 89th minute winner for Gamba, but there was so much happening in this game before that moment of magic from the Brazilian settled it, Sam. I guess the, coming into this game, we expected the goals. I guess the most surprising thing was that we didn't get one in the first half at the Panasonic Stadium. An early chance for Takashi Usami, but he shot too close to the Kashiwa keeper, Kim. And Kashiwa's best chance probably fell to Cristiano, but he blazed over after being set up by his partner in crime up top for Raysol, Michael Olunga. So, the first half ended goalless, but there was still plenty happening.
Yeah, there are decent chances for either side. If you look on Twitter, these two teams, it was quite funny as a neutral where they've got quite partisan sets of supporters. So if you look on one side of Twitter, this was all Gamba. And if you look on the other side, it was all Kashiwa. I was definitely somewhere in the middle of it. It was a pretty even game. Both teams had a couple of chances, not too much. It was quite defences on top a little bit. Kashiwa had defended so poorly against Shonan last week, but they'd got Koga back in that back line. They looked a lot better. They kind of kept Gamba at arm's length, and really Gamba did the same to Kashiwa, except for that one error from Idaguchi where he lets the ball go, and then Olunga and Cristiano 2-on-1 with the defender. You think for all the money that Kashiwa are going to score, but Cristiano, as good a player as he is, and I love Cristiano, and as good as he has been since coming back from injury, his finishing occasionally is just power over everything, and that's what he did here. He just blazed it into the stands, really. It just needs a bit more composure in that position, and it sort of cost Kashiwa. You'd think maybe if they went 1-0 up going into half time, then it could be a different second half, but yeah, they kept Gamba in that one, and I thought Gamba themselves, otherwise, other than that, they were pretty decent that half. It was pretty even going into the second half, but and they were just, I think, slightly better team second half.
All right, well, it didn't take them long to go in front after the break. Kosuke Onose's 30-yard rasper was batted out for a corner by Kim Sung-gyu in the 51st minute. Takashi Usami sent the set piece to the far post where Patrick jumped in front of and Kashiwa argued into Kim, who failed to catch, and the ball went in off the keeper's gloves for an own goal. So how did Raysol Twitter react to that, Sam, and what did you think? Did you think they had a shout for a foul there on the keeper, or had Patrick jumped pretty much straight up and he was entitled to go for the ball?
They didn't react too well, and I think 9 times out of 10, rightly or wrongly, this is given as a foul. But I don't think Patrick does a lot wrong. He jumps in front of Kim, his arms are down, it's not like he's got his elbows up in his face or his chest or anything like that. And he jumps pretty fairly, and I think Kim needs to be a lot stronger there. He's a very good goalkeeper, especially as a shot stopper, but there are occasions where from crosses he's not strong enough, and I think this was one of those occasions. I think he should be going through Patrick. I know Patrick's a strong player, but I mean, you still got to be you can't just shy away from it. And Kim didn't really go for it. I think he was just always thinking that a foul is going to come. But I'm pretty happy that the referee didn't for once, that didn't give a foul here. So, yeah, I thought Patrick challenged fairly. And, the goal was fine, in my opinion. How about you?
Yeah, it's one of those that the first time you see it and you see the keeper go flying, you think, well, yeah, okay. But I think he has milked it. And, I agree that Patrick hasn't done a lot wrong there. He's entitled to jump for the ball. As you say, no elbows flying, which is unlike Patrick. But, fair dues, I think. And, we often slate the referees on this podcast, myself in particular. But, yeah, I think the referees got that one right. And, apologies to Raysol Twitter if you all go unsubscribing to the podcast with both of us siding with the referee here. But, yeah, I think it was the right decision. And, so that was Gamba into the lead in the 7th minute of the second half. And, well, they had an excellent triple chance to go 2-0 up just past the hour, Sam. But Kim got down well to keep out Shu Kurata's fierce strike, and Tayo Koga blocked Onose's follow-up before Kim smothered Patrick's attempt at an overhead kick. So obviously 2-0 would have made it much more difficult for Raysol, Sam. But was this an indication, as you say, of Gamba really growing into the game in the second half and beginning to assert themselves?
Yeah, they had really. The first goal definitely changed the balance of the play, and they looked like they were going to score at any moment. I think at this point there was a real period of maybe 15, 20 minutes where there was a lot of Gamba pressure. This just highlighted it. It also shows that Kim on his day as a shot stopper, he's a very good goalkeeper. He'll get down or he'll get up to Patrick, as it was for the second save that he made. It also showed that they were defensively a lot more dogged. They put bodies on the line, as Koga did. It was fairly reminiscent of their Levan Cup semi-final, where a lot of the play that they had to do was dogged defending, like last-ditch blocks at the back. So that's kind of what they were doing. They managed to escape this, which is credit to them, I suppose, given how poorly they defended in recent weeks, that they managed to get out of this period of play. And Gamba themselves maybe think they should have been a lot more clinical, but I think the saves that were made were very good, and I don't think there was much more Gamba could have done. They were just stopped by pretty good defending and goalkeeping by Kashua.
No, fair enough. And so, yeah, well, the game stayed at 1-0, and that obviously meant that Kashua were still in with a big chance of either equalising or, going on to win it themselves. And then with the 10 minutes left, they did indeed draw level after a game of head tennis broke out 35 yards from the Gamba goal. The ball ended up with Ataru Esaka, who cushioned a superb volleyed through ball for Michael Olunga. And, of course, you know what happened next. The big Kenyan smashed in his 23rd goal of the season in his 23rd appearance, past Masaaki Higashiguchi. Obviously, Cristiano's return has helped Olunga out a lot in recent weeks, Sam. But, yeah, we shouldn't forget the contribution that Esaka has made throughout this campaign. Obviously scored a few excellent goals himself, but he's laid a lot on for Olunga, and this was the latest example. So it was properly game on with 10 minutes to go.
Yeah, I think I agree. Asaka, I think, is the unsung hero in this Kashua team. He's got quality dripping out of him. I think this through ball, I mean, the passage of play beforehand is disgusting. I think it goes up in the air about 8 times, just people hoofing it up or headering it up. It's just dreadful. And finally, it comes to Asaka, who thinks, forget this nonsense, plays a terrific little volleyed through ball to Olunga, and Olunga makes no mistake, as he usually doesn't. So, yeah, the goal was, it was out of dross, but it was a terrific finish in the end. And yeah, Esaka, just every game he seems to do something. He gets in those little pockets of spaces. He's so clever when he gets on the ball. He knows where Olunga's runs are. He knows where Cristiano's runs are. Those three can link up so well. It's just that sometimes the finishing, I think Olunga's to blame as well. It's hard to say when he's got so many goals, but Kashua do create a lot of chances, and Olunga does miss a lot of chances, which is, I mean, if he was a little more clinical, I mean, he could be on 35, 40 goals this season. But yeah, Esaka really well worked, and yeah, he puts himself in with a shout of a team of the year position. It's quite difficult in those positions, but yeah, I've really liked what Osaka's done this year.
Yeah, absolutely tremendous. So 10 minutes to go, properly game on, but Gamba won it with that late special from Ademilson. He took a pass from Shu Kurata after a patient Gamba build-up through the right side of midfield. Worked himself a yard of space, and from inside the D sent a thunderous left-footed drive via a slight deflection off the boot of Tatsuya Yamashita beyond Kim. Well, obviously, they thought they'd won it in the 89th minute, but they did need a late intervention from Higashiguchi, who flew to his right to keep out Kengo Kitazume's shot that looked headed for the top corner in the 93rd minute. So, obviously, Gamba supporters are celebrating, and, Ademilson was the man of the hour, and I guess looking back on it now, it's a little bit bittersweet. As we said, he might have played his last game for the club, Sam, but it was a terrific finish. We can't take that away from him, and, a special goal to win this important game for Gamba.
Yeah, if we put everything else aside, just focus on this performance in this game, I think it's a very, very good finish. The way he creates that little bit of space for himself on the edge of the area, it's a very good left-footed strike. I wonder if this deflection takes it away from Kim, and if Kim might have had a good chance of saving it had it not been deflected, but we'll never know. He didn't get the chance that Higashiguchi does later on to make another crucial save for him. He's had one of his best seasons in the last few years, Higashiguchi, and it didn't have necessarily too much to do in this game, but when called upon, makes a fantastic save where Kim just, it's unfortunate this deflection just takes it just away from him, but take nothing away from the shot. It was a very good effort from Adam Ilson. It's a very big victory for Gamba. A battle between two of these ACL chasing clubs. It puts Gamba up into third place. They're only behind Cerezo on goal difference with a game in hand. So they're in a really nice position, actually, Gamba, to kind of cement this ACL place.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Sam. Actually, I tell you what, before I do that, though, we've been referencing the, you know, team of the season candidates in the last few weeks. Higashiguchi, a big shout for you. I know you're a big fan of Mitch Langerak, but, yeah, for me, Higashiguchi would just about shade. I mean, it's tempting to just put the entire Frontale first team in there, I suppose, isn't it? And, I mean, they have conceded 7 goals fewer than Gamba. Yeah, for me, Higashiguchi has been hugely important to not only Gumba's surge up the table, but their performances throughout the season. I know it's a rough one to throw at you with no notice, but who would you have as your first choice keeper at the moment?
No, definitely Higashiguchi. Oh, right. I think he's been the most consistent goalkeeper of anyone this season. He has bailed out Gamba on a number of occasions. A lot of their games have been really quite tight, and the defence in front of him has not always been clicking. They've been trying to get Shoji and Kim and Miura, whoever it might be, just to link together. There have been errors in that, and Higashiguchi has been on hand to save them. I think the other goalkeeper, Langerak, has been fantastic, and Kim for Cerezo has been very good. I think Nishikawa's had one of his better seasons as well, but they've all had a couple of errors in them, I think, but Higashiguchi has just been consistent, a rock all season. So, yeah, he's front runner for me in Team of the Season.
Rightio then. And, okay, and that's what I was going to say. Where are you looking at a J1 table? Because the official J-League website and, indeed, the official J-League data site have the two Osaka clubs in joint second. Now, maybe they don't want to offend anybody, but they both obviously have 48 points, and they both have a goal difference of +9, but I would have thought that Cerezo would have been above them and technically second, with Gamba third on goals scored, because Cerezo have scored 2 goals more, even though they've played a game more. But yeah, they are literally together in second place in both of the proper J-League websites that I'm looking at. So, yeah, I was going to ask you what you think the go is there, because, I mean, Cerezo even won the first meeting of the two sides this season. Not that that should come into it necessarily, but, so I was confused why they were joint second.
Yeah, that is confusing. I use the league table that kind of gets fed into my work stuff, so I have it as Cerezo ahead on goal scored by 2 goals. So, yeah, I don't really have to use the J-League website, so that's weird that they're trying to put them as joint second, where it's not necessarily the case. They've got their own tiebreaker, so I'm sure they could have figured it out. So, yeah, a little weird, but perhaps they're not wanting to split the Osaka rivalry.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, as we said, it was a huge win for Gamba, and their unbeaten run continues. It's 8 wins and a draw for them. And, as we say, up to, joint second or third, or whichever way you want to slice it, they're right up at the sharp end of the chasing pack behind Kawasaki. We've obviously, I'm not sure if we really did Kawasaki enough justice last week, Sam, but we did mention that, yeah, their points total already would have been enough to win the league in several previous J1 seasons. And with Cerezo losing, which we're going to come on to next, and Gamba joining them on points, it means now that Gamba, having played a game fewer, is the... they're not going to actually overtake Kawasaki, of course, but they represent the team that could score the most points, accrue the most points behind Frontale and properly set Frontale a target. So with Gamba and Kawasaki both having 10 games left, the most points that Gamba could possibly garner is 78. That includes a meeting with Frontale later on in the season. So as Kawasaki currently have 65, even though their goal difference is 40 more than both Gamba and Cerezo, we're going to say they need an extra point rather than just coming tied on points. So Frontale need 14 points to guarantee a third top-flight title in 4 seasons. So I'm sure they'll box off five wins in their next five or six games, and that will be well and truly taken care of. First things first, though, the next target for Frontale is to garner eight more points. That will take them to 73 and past the single season top flight record of 72, currently held by a number of teams. Urawa in 2006, Kashima the following season, Nagoya and Kashiwa back-to-back in 2010 and 2011, and indeed by Kawasaki themselves and Kashima in 2017 when Frontale won their first league title on goal difference. So there you go, Frontale supporters. Yeah, you weren't in action over the weekend, but we still managed to get a decent mention in for you. And yes, 14 is the magic number for Frontale. So obviously their points, or points that Degumba Osaka drop, and that, yeah, in any combination of that number, and they'll get there. But as we know, it's an inevitability. So, yeah, we've mentioned ever so briefly already that Cerezo Osaka lost on Saturday. That was away at Urawa. Another one of the more interesting games on the match day 24 slate. And, yeah, well, Sam, we wondered what Urawa would do for an encore after their 6-0 smashing of Sendai last week. Well, they've put in another excellent performance, and a massive credit to Reds. They had to do it despite going 1-0 down, with Yuta Toyokawa continuing on his purple patch in front of goal with a terrific opener for the visitors in the 28th minute. So I guess we better give Toyokawa his due before we move on and give Reds theirs.
Yeah, well, I suppose so. Yeah, he came on last week, two very good goals, especially that one lob. And yeah, he started really well. I think this was his second chance of the game. He already forced a decent save from Nishikawa earlier in the match. And then, yeah, he does very well. He brushes off pretty weak challenge from Iwanami, cuts inside Makino, then strikes it into the bottom corner. So, yeah, good to see him playing with confidence. He hasn't really played with any confidence since joining Cerezo. So, yeah, that was good to see. And it really got Cerezo off to a terrific start. They were the better team for these opening exchanges. They're off the back of a fantastic victory over Yokohama last week. So, at that point, you thought Cerezo, the way they're playing, they're going to just kind of ease this one out. They're defensively usually very good. Reds have been hit and miss, even though they played very well last week. So, yeah, I expected Cerezo to kind of see it off quite comfortably, but you have to give a lot of credit to the way Urawa played. They were fantastic, the better team for the rest of the game, the final 60 minutes or so. They kept Cerezo at arm's length defensively, which they haven't done to many teams this season. And then going forward, they played a lot more good football, a bit like they were playing against Sendai. They finished their chances very well. And yeah, terrific and fully deserving 3 points for them.
Yeah, most definitely. They almost hit back immediately after Toyokawa's goal, but Martinez headed too close to Kim Jin-hyun in the Cerezo net from Ryosuke Yamanaka's cross. That was not to be Yamanaka's last involvement in proceedings in the first half. And then, yeah, by half-time, Reds were ahead, and it was a pretty dirty 10 or 15-minute patch for Ayumu Seko, wasn't it, Sam? First, Koya Yuruki tumbled under a lunge from Seko, and Shinzo Kuroki fired in a 34th-minute penalty under Kim's dive, and then Yamanaka's 30-yard blast was deflected past a helpless Kim by Seko in the 44th minute. So, yeah, a very good reaction to falling behind by Reds. They took a deserved lead from that point in the game, obviously, into half-time. And then, well, Yuki Muto spurned a couple of decent chances to add to Urawa's lead. Then Shusaku Nishikawa did well to tip over a header from Bruno Mendes before Martinez made amends and made the point safe in the 71st minute when he volleyed in from close range after Kim could only parry a blast from the substitute Leonardo. So, yeah, we mentioned there is a ruck of teams, Sam, in contention for the ACL places. Indeed, this win has taken Urawa above Kashiwa, up to 8th in the table. You might argue they've got too much traffic to climb over, but it is still, it's a lot of traffic, but it's 8 points they have to make up on the second and third at the moment, Cerezo and Gumba, whichever order you want to put them in. So, it's four unbeaten, it's two big home wins in a row for them. So I don't know, is there, are they a possibility to click into some sort of a consistent form over the last month and a half, 2 months, and be in the reckoning at the end of things?
Well, the quality of player is, has always been there, but there hasn't been any consistency this season. So I don't, I've got no evidence really to suggest that they're going to be going on a fantastic run to end the season and climb over so many teams that they've got to get over. I know they've got games in hand on Yokohama and Tokyo, and I think maybe one on Kashima as well. But it's still a large mountain to get across, and I've not seen enough necessarily from them on a consistent basis that they're going to do that. But if they can play like they have done the last 2 weeks, and they've got, with the players they have, they've definitely got the ability to go on that run that Gamba are going on at the moment, and to be able to climb up and be at least challenging for these top four positions. And yeah, I think it's unlikely, but yeah, you can't rule them out. They're definitely in with a shot.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, well, yeah, I'll put it off for as long as I can, but yeah, we have to talk about events at Ajinomoto Stadium on Saturday. You can hear, listen, my voice is already going already. So yeah, obviously FC Tokyo and Yokohama F Marinos had already played their Matchday 24 fixtures earlier on in the season, so their Matchday 28 clash was brought forward to Saturday. And while Tokyo certainly have not had the rub of the green in terms of decisions going against them in recent weeks, they had no one but themselves to blame for this demoralising result. Their own profligacy and stupidity ultimately costing them dearly. And obviously, I haven't mentioned the result yet. You might already know it, listeners. It finished Yokohama F Marinos 4, FC Tokyo 0. Sam, to me, this was never a 4-0 game in a million years, but you don't take your chances, and your opponent does, however scrappily, you're going to pay the price.
Yeah, definitely. This was, for the first 55, 60 minutes, this was pretty much all Tokyo. I thought they pressed high, they caused a lot of errors from Yokohama, who just kind of gave the ball away quite a lot, as they often do when they're playing poorly. And yeah, just didn't take advantage of it. There were so many good chances. First half, there was one where Nagai crossed to Mita, who comes in, he's unmarked, he volleys it, he just doesn't get over the ball, he probably should do it better. Abe has a couple of decent chances where, again, he's in space, a lot of space, but just can't hit the target. I think Nagai had a chance, so you could have easily been 3 or 4 nil up before Yokohama get their first goal. And yeah, as you said, you only have yourselves to blame for not taking those chances. And then the goals that Yokohama score, they're scruffy, they're a bit of a mess at the back from Tokyo, then you fall to down to 10 men just through petulance, which then leaves a large gap in midfield, which Yokohama then can play into, and then they take advantage of that. So really, just, it was a self-destruction second half from Tokyo, and you should never have got yourself into that position. You should have been quite comfortable in the game, but when you don't take your chances, yeah, games can run away from you, and that's what it did in the second half.
All right, well, that's this game wrapped up. Thank you, and good night. Yeah, no, yeah, just, I tell you what, when we're talking about the Kashiwa game and Cristiano blazing over, I was just getting flashbacks to Nagai 6 minutes into the second half, because he's done all the hard work, and he's standing, well, he's rushed to the penalty spot, and he's just, yeah, he's hit row Z, and it's like, come on, man. Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't expect much better from him, as we know what he's like, but I mean, yeah, good Lord. Yeah, the chance, yeah, you've listed off the chances. It was, yeah, it was really, well, it was encouraging, because we were really playing well, and I thought, yeah, I thought we hadn't run the game, but as you say, we definitely had the better of it, and the better chances. There's absolutely no question at all about that. Yeah, it was Shuto Abe was absolutely terrific for us, but it was just, yeah, unfortunately, in front of goal, the two big chances he had, he couldn't put away. The second one of those, I think, was in the 53rd minute. And then from the restart, as Park Il-gyu got play going again, Yokohama F. Marinos took the ball up the pitch. Eric played the ball into the box to Junior Santos, who held off Tsuyoshi Watanabe and stroked past Akihiro Hayashi for his first of two goals in the space of 114 seconds. The second came after Watanabe's miscued clearance when he should have just hoofed the ball away first time, hit Masato Morishige and went straight to the grateful Brazilian who repeated the dose. They weren't classics at all from Junior Santos, but basically Tokyo were given a harsh lesson in the art of finishing. It doesn't matter how scruffy they are, as long as they go in, that's all that counts, obviously. And they'd been in the game until they fell behind, but then any chance that Tokyo had of getting back into it evaporated when the simply idiotic Arthur Silva lashed out with his arm and caught Ken Matsubara in the face away from the ball just past the hour. So obviously that's the second unsavoury incident on the pitch involving an FC Tokyo Brazilian player in the past couple of weeks, with Leandro obviously currently serving his own three-match ban. Arthur Silva will be joining him in one of those, I'm sure, after this. Just absolutely ridiculous rush of blood to the head, a completely unnecessary act. And that obviously left Tokyo with an almost impossible mountain to climb. As Sam said, the extra space in midfield allowed F. Marinos to look a lot better, and they passed the ball around a lot more assuredly. They then added salt to Tokyo's wounds with two goals in stoppage time. First, Watanabe diverted Kota Mizunuma's cross past Hayashi for an own goal in the 91st minute, and then Eric, who did appear late on to be very, very determined indeed to get a goal for himself, found the net when he drove home from the edge of the box with pretty much the last kick of the game in the 95th minute. So, that's FC Tokyo out of the top three now. Sam, I didn't actually check because I was too depressed and I didn't want to. The last time that Tokyo weren't in the top three, but I'm sure it's been a very, very long time since they have been fourth or lower. Obviously, as I said in the intro to this game, a very demoralising loss, but it does complete a very good week for F. Marino. So, I shouldn't just wallow in my pity for myself the entire time. Once they'd gone in front, if Muddy knows, they've obviously deserved to win with the way they've played in the last 30, 35 minutes of this game.
Yeah, the credit has to go to them for just taking their chances. I think the first two goals, are quite poor from Tokyo. The first one, Watanabe is drawn to the ball for no real reason, leaves the space for Junior Santos in behind him and then can never get back. The second one, I'll go off on Arthur Silva for a bit. Obviously, it's the clearance from Watanabe that hits Morishige, but Tokyo are left so exposed by, there's a tackle in midfield where Arthur Silva has a 50-50, and it's such a weak tackle. It's so poor from your holding midfielder. He has to go through the man, but just doesn't at all. And then it leaves a kind of a 3-on-2 situation for Yokohama, which they take advantage of. It leaves the space for Junior Santos as Watanabe is forced to come across. And then the red card for Arthur Silva I have to look at as well. It's definitely a red card, but I have no idea how the referee makes the decision because he doesn't see it. He plays on. The game is played on for a long while, actually. There's no flag from the linesman. I have my spy in the ground, Stuart Woodward, who says that no one next to the linesman saw the linesman indicate anything to the referee. So there is no way that any of the officials have seen it. So he's given a red card based on information outside of the game. There's no VAR, so you're not allowed to do that. So it's very weird officiating. It's the correct result, but I don't have a clue how they got to it. And it has saved Arthur Silva a three-match ban, because he would have got a three-match ban if nobody had seen it in live play. But he's managed to get away with a one-match ban because he's given a red card. And I think that's been confirmed. I'm pretty sure I saw that from Dan Orlowitz this morning, that it has been confirmed as a one-match ban. So that is slightly ridiculous, slightly fortunate for Arthur Silva. Not consistent at all either, because it's pretty much exactly the same as what Leandro did. So that's very weird. But going back to Yokohama, they were from 2-0 up. I thought they took advantage well of the extra space. I think Eric is fantastic in the way that he can get the ball down. He kind of goes past players quite easily. He's always positive. And with the space that they have and the extra pressure that was off them, I thought they looked very good, and they went on and probably deserved the extra goals as they came. But Tokyo, the game was there for them, and I think they just shot themselves in the foot.
Well, yeah, an absolute gut punch in stoppage time. And of all the ex-FC Tokyo players who I don't rate at all to be involved in one of the goals for Koto Mizunuma, thank God he didn't actually score himself. That would have just been the ultimate insult to injury for me personally. But, you're right about the red card. It must have come from the fourth official. Because as you say, the play did go on for a long time. I don't have the benefit of having Stewart's ear. I didn't know that about the linesman, but yeah, it didn't appear there was anything from either of the assistants. And Ange Postecoglou was bemoaning the activity of the fourth official in the Gunma Osaka game recently, the one I watched for our patrons, but. It might have been to his side's benefit this time that the fourth official advised the referee that there had been violent conduct, and at the same time we're obviously not excusing what Arthur Silva did. It was completely completely unnecessary, completely deserving of a 3-match ban, quite frankly. But if the fact is true that he's only going to serve one, as you say, he's getting away with one there. But all in all, that was, pretty unsavoury altogether. It wasted a very good first 50 or so minutes from Tokyo, which is really frustrating for me. But I don't know whether we should move on and take a break or...
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, actually. You mentioned that Tokyo had fallen to fourth place for the first time in a long while. I know it's just after quite a negative result for you, but having played maybe two or three games more than a lot of the teams around you, do you still consider Tokyo to be kind of favourites for the ACL, or do you think that's definitely something that it should be aiming for? Or would you consider switching focus to maybe the Levant Cup and the upcoming group stages of the ACL?
Yeah, it's a really... I say it's a tough one, but it shouldn't really be, because, we're the biggest club from the biggest city in the country, so we should be trying to finish as high up the table as we can in everything. We should be trying to win everything we can. And, the fact we're in the League Cup final, I mean, obviously you're parachuted in to the quarterfinal. That's a huge advantage being, in the ACL this year. You might as well go and try and win that. But, it is only a point behind the two Osaka clubs, though they obviously have at least two and three in the case of Gunma games in hand. So it does look a pretty big mountain to climb now, even though it's 1 point. But those games, well, they're not really games in hand, are they? Because they'll just be played regularly. We've played the extra games, so usually you would say towards the end of the season, having games in hand can be a blessing and a curse, because you've got those opportunities to earn points, but you'll be out on your feet having to play so many games in quick succession. But in the case of Gunma and Cerezo, they'll just be playing regularly scheduled games along with the rest of the league, with the exception of the ACL clubs. So I'm not sure what Kenta Hasegawa will do, what his mindset might be like after a defeat like that. But as far as I'm concerned, you're the biggest club from the biggest city, so you've got to be trying to finish as high as you can. You know, FC Tokyo should always be in the Asian Champions League, as far as I'm concerned. So, keep pushing with the knowledge that, the supporters would love to win the Levain Cup for a third time. But, the league's still got to be the priority, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I suppose the one blessing that you have with this kind of schedule is that, you've had a pretty poor defeat against Yokohama, but the next game is only a couple of days away. Very interesting one, actually, the kind of a dress rehearsal for the Levain Cup final against Kashua Reysol. So, win that back on the bike, you might be looking a lot more positive going into the final few games that Tokyo have in the season. So, it's a pretty good game, I think, to come up next. It's one where you have to be focused on. It's not like you've got a Tosu or something where you might have your mind a little bit off it. You might try and rest players. You've got to go for it against Kashua. You've got to play your best team to get anything out of it. So I think that's a good fixture for Tokyo to have to try and arrest the kind of disappointment from this weekend.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, apologies, listeners. We did go on for a little bit too long, probably about Tokyo there, and don't want to take anything away from F. Marinos and their 4-0 victory. But it was a difficult one to sit through. At least the last 35 minutes or so. But as Sam says, Tokyo back on the bike on Wednesday, and they'll try to get back to winning ways. Yokohama F. Marinos are also in action, and they'll look to kick on when they visit Hiroshima. We'll have more on the midweek fixtures and the what's coming up on the weekend at the end of the episode. But yeah, I think I've spent most of my pennies on the chat on goings on at Ajinomoto Stadium, Sam. So we'd better stretch our leg and take a short break. We'll be back after this. Welcome back. Next, let's head to Nagoya, where Grampus hosted Sendai, who had actually sunk to the foot of the table after Shonan's point on Wednesday. All three clubs at the bottom coming into this match day, Shonan, Shimizu and Vegalta, were all separated on goal difference. And yeah, Belmare had risen from 18th to the giddy heights of 16th with that home draw against Tosu. And there was another one to follow on Sunday that we'll come on to at the end of the episode. But yes, Nagoya hosted bottom club Sendai. Sam, this appeared to me from the highlights to be, Jakub Slovic trying to keep out numerous efforts from the Nagoya Grampus attackers. And in particular, Naoki Maeda, Hiroyuki Abe and Mateus tested the big pole, and unfortunately for him, there was nothing he could do when Sho Inagaki's 65th minute shot took a wicked deflection off Keiya Shihashi and looped over him. So poor old Jakub, when everything was shot straight at him, he was doing the business, no problems at all. But it took a wicked deflection for Nagoya to beat him on this day.
Yeah, you've got to feel sorry for him because, as you say, he was saving pretty much everything that was able to be saved. The one save from low down from Hiroyuki Abe is fantastic, right down into the bottom right-hand corner. A lot of the other ones were slightly more routine, but yeah, he has to make the saves, and he was doing. Even late on, there were a few from Kanazaki where he tipped one onto the crossbar. There was another one fairly towards the top corner that Slovic saved. So, yeah, he did not deserve to be on the losing side in this game, and Nagoya got a little bit of luck, and it's kind of what they needed in this game. I don't think they were completely at their best. Sendai were a lot more reserved than they were maybe against Urara after that 6-0 hiding. They wanted to be a little bit more compact. They sat quite deep, and a lot of the Nagoya chances were probably from long range more so than they would have wanted. But Nagoya kept pressing, you've got to give them that. They kept having chances, and eventually they got a lucky break. It's so unfortunate for Slovic, the way this, the ball kind of deflects off Shihashi, then just loops over, just agonisingly out of his reach. So, yeah, I've really felt sorry for him. But Nagoya, for all their attempts on goal, for all their possession, did deserve the victory. But they did need a little bit of luck to get over the line.
And Sendai's reaction to that loss from last week then, Sam, you said they sat in a lot deeper, but the stats are, they're not great. 14 shots to one, obviously, in favour of Grampus. So Sendai, it appears, offered nothing at all going forward. And, no silver lining for their supporters after this. I mean, obviously, they didn't get battered again, but when they don't give them anything to get excited about going forward, then I'm sure that's not really much consolation, is it?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. This was very much an exercise in damage limitation. They, as an attacking force, they were non-existent. They started with two strikers, but it didn't really look like it. They were both there, I think, for their aerial ability to head away corners and that sort of thing. They just did it. Yeah, offered very little going forward. Defensively, I know there's a lot of shots from Nagoya, but a lot are from long range. There are a lot are like pop shots, not really where they had carved Sendai open and then got in one-on-one with Slovic or anything like that. They were held to arm's length to a certain degree, but even when you do that with the players that they have, Nagoya, even if there wasn't the deflection, you'd have thought maybe Mateus would have pulled something out, or Abe would have done, or Kanazaki. There were enough quality players, even from distance, that they would have probably broken Sendai down eventually. But I don't know if a 1-0 defeat after a 6-0 it seems like progress, but you've still, especially when there's nothing to play for in the league, you want at least a bit of entertainment, you want a bit of effort and going forward. There was definitely effort defensively, but you want your team to at least look like they're capable of being in the game, and really this was a 1-0 hammering.
Yeah, fair enough then. So Nagoya well and truly in the reckoning for the ACL spots. They have 45 points, having played 25 games. So that's 3 points behind both Cerezo and Gamba Osaka. Gamba have a game in hand on them, but a win that Nagoya had to have on another day. If Slovic wasn't properly on his game, obviously they would have won it far more comfortably, but they probably could have done with a decent boost to their goal difference, but they'll be happy with the 1-0 win regardless, I'm sure. Grampus, especially coming on the back of Wednesday night's loss away at Yokohama F. Marinos, so good to get themselves back to winning ways. The other 1-0 result from the match day, Sam, was a far more even game up at the Kashima Soccer Stadium, and it ended with hosts Antlers finishing a great week for themselves, following up their win in Kobe with that 1-0 home win over Hiroshima. Plenty to talk about in this game. Lots of chances at both ends. Some spectacular goalkeeping. And then finally, a brilliant winner from Antlers' big Brazilian Everaldo.
Yeah, I really like this game. First half especially was so open from the first minute. Both teams really going for it. You don't necessarily expect that from an Hiroshima side, but they were doing so. Both teams had really good chances, very good saves. There was Inokai, was the centre-back, found himself 5 minutes in, like 15 yards from goal, in the centre of goal. He should have scored, but he had no idea why he was there. And then Hayashi made a wonderful save from, I think it was a Machida header from close range. Really good reaction save. Then at the other end, Ezekiel, I think it was, down the left-hand side. He does really well, the run. He gets to the left-hand side of the goal, then fires across but hits the post. There were so many chances. I think Chajima followed up that effort, and he was blocked on the goal line. It was just, really good end-to-end stuff. It was, terrific watch. And I mean, they couldn't necessarily keep the pace up in the second half. It wasn't quite to the same extent, but the quality was still there. And the goal, I mean, Misao plays this wonderful crossfield ball, and Everaldo's up against Nogami, which is a complete mismatch. And Nogami, I think, is trying to jump, but like Everaldo leaps quite gracefully and chests it down perfectly right in front of him, takes it on and just wallops it past the goalkeeper. The terrific finish from him, deserving of winning any game. And it needed to be quite that sort of finish, because Hayashi was in really good form, and it took something special to beat him. And talking of special, I don't know if you caught Zago's celebration after the goal, where he goes like a drunken uncle at a party. He's just wheeling away with his aeroplane spin. It's pretty incredible, really, the celebration. But really enjoyed the game. Hiroshima had chances after the goal to get back into it, but Oki, the young goalkeeper, he was on good form as well, say, from Kaobe. So Kashima, terrific victory for them to get away with it, because I thought Hiroshima probably deserved at least something out of the game. But of the games this weekend, I think it was only 1-0, but I'd say go out of your way to watch this one, because especially first half, it was fantastic.
Yeah, tremendous game. I really enjoyed the highlights package. Fantastic. Lots of chances at either end. And Zago's airplane celebration is definitely one to catch most heavily. And the Ezekiel chip, Sam, it's very much a collector's item, that shot, because it actually kisses the bar before it comes back off the post. One of those rare shots that actually hits two bits of the woodwork at once. It's absolutely superb. Not on the obviously the join of the crossbar and the post, but it skims off the bar before hitting the post and then bouncing out where Chajima's follow up was blocked by Nagato. But terrific game for a 1-0. I concur. And I don't know, dare we say an Olunga-esque goal from Everaldo? He probably won't like that comparison, because he's an excellent striker in his own right. But just the way he completely Nogami was never ever getting that ball, was he? And to chest it past him 30 odd yards from goal, and in a stride he was in on Hayashi, who, as you say, was in a terrific form. But the ball was high into the back of the net before Hayashi knew what had happened. Everaldo struck it with such venom. So Antlers as Nagoya, right in the thick of things. They have 45 points as well, but they have played an extra game. So indeed, two more than Gumba and one more than both the Cerezo and Grampus. So slightly a bigger hill to climb for Antlers, but we know about their championship pedigree. Well, they're not going to win the championship this year, but their winning mentality and it wouldn't put anything past Antlers, especially as it appears they're rounding into some form in the latter third of the season. Moving on, and indeed up to Sapporo, where hosts Consadole entertained Yokohama FC on Saturday and ultimately ran out comfortable 3-0 victors. It was great to see friend of the podcast Jay Bothroyd back in the Sapporo lineup, and he set up Sapporo's first of the afternoon in the 16th minute, dropping deep to receive the ball and then sliding in a lovely first time ball for Anderson Lopez, who held off Yuki Kobayashi and finished past Yuji Rokutan. Lopez looked to return the favour 5 minutes before half-time after a surge through the centre. Bothroyd's delicate chip from the right side of the area headed over by a scrambling Masahiko Inoha, much to Bothroyd's frustration. Looked like the ball was heading for the back of the net, but Inoha got back in just the nick of time to save Yokohama FC from going 2-0 down at the break. Lopez did finally get his assist after Sapporo had weathered a decent spell of a second half Yokohama FC pressure. Not sure, Sam. What do you reckon? Do you reckon he was trying to chip a shot over Rokutan, or should we give him the benefit of the doubt that he was trying to pick out his teammate, the substitute Douglas Oliveira, in the 79th minute?
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. When I first saw it, I thought he just messed up the shot. I still sort of think he has, but if he has, he's messed it up quite badly. So I'm going to say it's a lovely little chip through to Douglas Oliveira. He definitely spots him, even though he never looks over there. But yeah, let's go with that and pretend that, yeah, this is meant. Because if it is meant, it looks fantastic and it's a really well-worked goal. So yeah, let's give it to them. And it's nice to see Douglas Oliveira get his first goal for Sapporo. He has tried so hard. He's not looked necessarily the most comfortable. He looks a little bit like Bambi on ice at times, but he definitely works hard and he really, yeah, he earned this goal. So I was happy for him. And yeah, let's pretend that Lopez has brought out a very good assist. Not quite as good as the link-up that he and Jay Bothroyd had in that first half, that, as you said, the flick for Lopez's goal was, yeah, terrific. They worked really well together first half. They haven't played together very often, with injuries to one or the other, or Anderson Lopez being in Brazil through COVID regulations and that sort of thing. So it was good to see them, at least for the first half, work really well together. Just a shame that Bothroyd kind of only managed that first 45 minutes before having to go off. But yeah, there were good signs for Sapporo for a lot of this game. You mentioned Yokohama did have a good spell of pressure. They didn't, in my opinion, have too many clear-cut chances. I don't think they looked like they were going to score very often. Sugano was back in goal for Sapporo and for the youngster Nakano. And I just think he organises that defence a little bit better. They're a lot more confident with him back there. Not to say that Nakano would perform poorly. I know he conceded a lot of goals, but they weren't necessarily his fault. But I just thought them as a unit together looked a lot more solid, and I think they really did keep Yokohama at bay for large periods. There were a few chances, but yeah, as I say, I don't think Yokohama really looked like getting back into the game.
No, fair enough then. So yeah, that first J-League goal for Douglas Oliveira in the 79th minute, and he won't get many easier than, sticking the ball into an unguarded net from 6 yards out. And credit to Anderson Lopez there. Sam has ruled in Anderson Lopez's favour, and I'm happy to go along with that. Then another sub, Takuro Kaneko, added the finishing touch in the 87th minute, intercepting a loose pass just inside his own half before driving forward unchallenged and finishing smartly past Rokutan from inside the box. So, Yokohama FC, I don't know whether they're completely out on their legs by that time, but Kaneko was basically able to stride half the length of the pitch, as I say, unchallenged, and a nice finish. So, Sapporo, three wins from their last four for them. So they'd obviously gone on a very, very long winless run. So it's good to see them back in some sort of form. And, a very an entertaining afternoon for the supporters up at the Sapporo Dome. So, yeah, well done to Consadole, Yokohama FC. Now behind Sapporo in the table after this result. Sapporo up to 13th, Yokohama FC dropping below them to 14th. All right, Sam, so we have one game left, and it was the only game played on Sunday. The rematch, they billed it from a Wednesday's barn burner of a 0-0 at the BMW Stadium. Obviously, relegation to the JFL was on the line, but ultimately both teams have earned a reprieve after a probably prearranged 2-2 draw at the real estate agent in front of the Station Stadium. Decent goals here, I suppose, Sam. Ultimately, yeah, the game probably wasn't much to watch, but you did at least get four goals, and that's probably more than you expected when you got up at God knows what hour on Sunday morning UK time. Akemi Berada gave visiting Belmare a 20th-minute lead, timing his run into the box perfectly to meet Mitsuki Saito's cross from the left and head past Tatsuya Morita. In the 34th minute, hosts Tosu were level, punishing a loose pass out of defence, and then uncertainty from the Shonan goalkeeper Kosei Tani, with Cho Dong-gyun heading home Daiki Matsuoka's cross up and over a stranded Tani, with a defender scrambling back on the line but unable to keep the ball out. In first half stoppage time, though, Shonan went back in front when Sam's, well, I can't call him your favourite, Sam, maybe your second favourite, Hiroshi Ibusuki slid in to turn home a low cross from the left from Tariq El-Yanusi, another one of your favourites. And then, poor old Tariq, 10 minutes after the break, he really should have made it 3-1, but he was completely unmarked, but to mishit his first-time shot from alongside the penalty spot. And, of course, the obvious man to bob up and equalise for Tosu was their super sub, Daichi Hayashi. He did the business off the bench, again firing home at Tani's near post in the 75th minute as, Tosu equalised again. And they almost won it 5 minutes later when Tomoya Koyomatsu's fierce strike had to be tipped over by Tani. So, four goals. As I say, probably more than you bargained for. Still probably wasn't the easiest match on the ice, Sam, but, what can you say about it?
Well, it was better than Wednesday. If this was a boxing match and this was a rematch, there'd have been no pay-per-view buys for this rematch. It was, Wednesday was awful. At least there was some quality in the goals that were scored. Outside of the goals, there wasn't a great deal, but, both teams scored a few decent goals. Barada's header I quite liked. It was a good cross. He nips in just inside the area. And then I think Tosu were the better team. I think Hayashi brought something, a little bit of energy and a little bit of quality to proceedings. And him and Koyomatsu kind of linked up quite nicely. And Hayashi has been one of the players for Tosu since their resumption following their COVID break, where he's just looked to kind of take the mantle, look to be the main striker for Tosun. He's got a few good goals. He always looks a threat. I think Ishii as well, as Tokyo fans can attest, he's quite dangerous. He was in both the games against them. And he in behind him, Koyomatsu, Hayashi, they've got a little bit of quality about them. Not a great deal by any means, but I appreciated the effort in this game. I didn't appreciate the lack of quality, but both teams went for it a little bit more, and fair play to them, they've kept their J1 status for another season, so here we'll do this all again next year.
Oh yeah, bet you can't wait. All right,
better not be 5 a.m. on a Sunday again, jeering me.
Oh yes, of all the times. All right. Well, they are the seven games from the weekend wrapped up. Then the six from Matchday 24, and the FC Tokyo Yokohama F Marinos game brought forward from Matchday 28. All that's left for us to do is to look ahead to what's coming up in the next few days in J1. We've teased it already throughout the episode. On Wednesday, the three ACL clubs are in action again in games brought forward. And, we've touched on the Levain Cup final preview when FC Tokyo host Kashiwa, and also Kobe visit Sendai. Both of those games are from match day 30, and in a game from match day 32, Yokohama F. Marinos travel to Hiroshima. Then on Saturday, spooky Halloween, seven games from match day 25 will be played, including the Halloween Tamagawa Classico, when runaway leaders Kawasaki Frontale host FC Tokyo. Gunma Osaka entertaining Sapporo, and Kashima versus Nagoya are two other highlights on the match day 25 slate. In particular, well, obviously the Classico is always a highly anticipated game, but yeah, in terms of ACL positioning, yeah, Kashima hosting Nagoya is an absolute cracker, isn't it, Sam? So I reckon that's that could be anything, that game, especially in with both of these teams coming in decent form. I suppose Nagoya should have probably done better against Sendai, but Antlers are certainly hitting their straps.
Yeah, that's the game. Tokyo Kawasaki's always an interesting one, but yeah, Kashima Nagoya is the game I'm most looking forward to. It's the most intriguing. When you imagine fourth place is going to be an ACL place, given the Emperor's Cup and whatnot, these two are I'd argue would be like fourth or fifth. I think these two are the ones that are on the cusp of it. I think Nagoya have not necessarily been as consistent, but managed to bounce back. Kashima are in a little bit of decent form, so yeah, this is a really interesting one. I think it'll go a long way, especially if Nagoya can win, have the 3-point gap plus the game in hand on Kashima. I think that could be vital in going into the end of the season. And for Kashima, I think, because they're in a slight disadvantage, as you mentioned earlier, where Nagoya, Gamba and Cerezo have all played less games, so they are in need of victories a lot more. So I think the onus might be on Kashima to kind of force the issue in that game, and it should make for a very interesting match.
Yes, indeed. And actually, I've just noticed, Seb, does this help you or hinder you that all of the games are spaced out in one-hour intervals? From 1 o'clock, Sendai hosting Hiroshima, a game kicks off an hour later in each case until Gunma entertains Sapporo at 7 o'clock. So is that good for you, or would you rather there were a couple at the same time?
It's very good for me, because at least at any given time I can be watching two matches, whether it's the first half of one and the second half of another. The only issue is the clocks have gone back, so the first game is a 4 a.m. kickoff, so that, I have to deal with that. But otherwise, I very much appreciate the scheduling from DAZN and the J-League.
All right, fair enough then. A lot to look forward to in the next week in J1, of course, as usual. And Sam, it's been terrific to catch up with you again. Thanks for being my shoulder to cry on about FC Tokyo's result. And, really looking forward to that Nagoya Kashima game myself as well, as well as the Classico, but I'm sure I'll be watching through my fingers there. But, we'll be back, obviously, to wrap it up next week. So look forward to catching up with you again then.
Yeah, look forward to it. I hope I was a fairly sympathetic shoulder to cry on. I'm not sure I was, but yeah, hopefully for Tokyo you have a better result in midweek and you can have a little bit of a smile on your face.
All right, very much appreciate that. Thank you, mate. And all right, well, that is it then for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank our patrons for their support on Patreon, and of course you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the week in J1. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.